The Monster on Mandrake Street by Colin P. Davies. An Adventure in Five Parts. Part 2, in which Parvo is spun a yarn and then unwinds. Previously on The Monster on Mandrake Street. Facing childhood fears is a necessary stage in becoming an adult, but some fears are more rational than others. Sometimes there's a very good reason to be scared. Parvo had been sent into the dark and sinister Mandrake Street by a spacer he met in the forest. It might not have been the wisest of moves, but people were dying and he needed to know why. The shopkeeper was young, female, and bald, a small figure sitting at a huge table. When Parvo walked in, she was prodding a spike inside the head of a Lazenby literary rat. She glanced up suddenly and pressed down the flap of fur on the rat's head. The rodent rose up on its back legs and examined Parvo, then picked up a tiny leather-bound book and scuttled off the table into the shadows. Parvo removed his hat. The door was open. No need to apologize. This is business, even when business is slow.
I wasn't actually apologizing.
My mistake. Parvo saw shelves of jars, and books, and wigs, and strange tools, the nature of which baffled him. On the wall behind the girl, a tri-V screen was tuned to the musical channel. The flamboyant aura from A Feast of Fangers was playing quietly and reminded Parvo of his one-time ambition to take a lead in a show.
I'm not sure whether you sell what I need.
Try me. Parvo stood before the table. The girl wore a black silk gown with a gaping neckline that swept down to reveal a shoulder as smooth as cream. Her build was slight, but her brown eyes were confident. She watched his face so intently that he became restless and leaned a slim but knottily muscled arm on the table. The wood creaked.
I met an old woman, a spacer.
He realized that he might appear threatening, but she seemed unperturbed. And?
Parvo straightened up. I thought this was a museum.
It is. I'm the curator.
Where are the monsters?
In the shadows just around the next corner, hiding in the dark spaces of the attic, lurking in the cold blackness at the bottom of the basement stairs.
Have you actually got any monsters?
She glanced at his bodyguard, which stood close to his rear. The best monsters are the ones we create ourselves.
Yes. All very riddlish.
He leaned in again.
Show me a real monster, and if you dare pass me a mirror, I'll have this place closed down and you prosecuted for unrepentant smart-assedness.
You have a way with words. An unusual way. She reached down to her side. I have something to show you. From a drawer, she took a scythe-shaped bone and placed it with a thud on the table. The object was the length of her forearm and rounded. Parvo could see now that it was not a bone. One end was a point, and the other ended in a fracture. At intervals down its length were studs of darker material.
What is it?
Said Parvo. I'm not surprised you don't recognize it. This is the tooth of a broadhead.
Parvo's breathing was tight.
The broadheads had attacked Earth and driven the Exodus to the stars. This world had been settled by Earthkind.
Parvo knew that much,
even though his own heritage was somewhat more rodent-y.
examination of Benaletti's papers had revealed that Parva was at least 50% human. But which 50%? He assumed it was the half of him that was at this very moment petitioning for a bathroom break. How did you get it? She smiled as though pleased with his reaction. The broadheads are not gods. Parvo peered more closely at the tooth. You can touch it, she said. This broadhead has been dead a long time. In fact, it would be best if you took the tooth with you.
Does it have magical properties?
No, but it has meaning. This is from Earth. It was a trophy from the war, before the war was lost.
Is this your only monster?
Mine? Yes. She held out the tooth toward him. After a moment's hesitation, he took it. But right now, you have a monster killing your staff.
Parvo backed away. So you know who I am? Do you also know the spacer?
She brought me the tooth. And it seems that was not all she brought home from her final voyage. Unwittingly, she also brought the monster.
And why is this monster killing my staff?
It's trying to find a way into your palace. Because it learned that this world's greatest wealth belongs to you.
Ha! Just another bandit. A vagabond.
Not at all. The girl shook her head. It's searching for the tooth.
So, Parvo told Anyerith, he led her by the arm into the grand dining room.
That's the whole story so far. It appears we're in danger of being visited by the Broadhead's Tooth Fairy.
You're not serious.
I'm one guard and two cooks serious. Apparently it's trying to find a way around my security.
I find that hard to believe.
Parvo pulled back the chair for her. What is also hard to believe is that the monster didn't take the tooth from the old woman when they were cooped up together in the spaceship.
You don't trust the girl's story?
He snapped his fingers at a servant who hurried off to the kitchen. Of course not. The Broadheads are said to be a disciplined warrior race. Incompetence is not their style and is hardly going to be the style of their mythological creatures. I imagine their Easter Bunny has fangs, and their Santa eschews the chimney in favor of kicking the door from its hinges.
Yet something is killing your staff.
Parvo chewed his lip. Oh, maybe we do have a monster, but it's not looking for a tooth.
Then what?
I don't know, but I do know someone who might.
Servants in white suits brought the main course of triple turkey, temporary trump, and tree turnip. An evening meal known colloquially as the afternoon tea, and in between mouthfuls of wonderful food, Anyar continued to ask questions to which Parvo had no answers. By the end of the meal, he no longer heard her words, but the sound of her voice played over him like the caress of a fragrant breeze. He was enjoying her company in a way completely new to him. He kept silent for fear of breaking the spell. The servants broke it for him. As they cleared the table, Parvo went to the grand window that looked down on the training ground, now dark and deserted save for poor Sergeant Sampson obsessively bayoneting the target dummy. If he was still there in the morning, Parvo would have him chained to his infirmary bed. Inyara moved in beside Parvo. Her eyes were wide and deep, communicating in the unspoken language which had served humans for millennia. Unfortunately, Parvo did not speak the language. He belched, quietly, in deference to his pretty guest.
I need to set a trap, he said.
How will you do that?
He grimaced, fighting with the fermenting food in his belly. What do all fairies have?
Wings?
A fairy godmother.
Inyar stared at him. Of course! Why didn't I think of that? Perhaps because I'm sane?
That's where the real power lies.
He rested his hands on his stomach.
Tomorrow we'll return to the forest and invite the old spacer to be my house guest.
And
What if she declines?
Then I will insist.
The twin rotor helicopter came down from the high city of Plateau to settle on a clearing at the edge of the Forest of Colorful Curses, so named by Benedict Benaletti as a result of his two-day ordeal chasing a wild goose amongst the peripatetic pines. A cyclone of snow blew up from the meadow as ranks of warmongering weevils threw themselves prone and trained their field glasses on the molehills below the helicopter runners. The creatures honed their claws and waited for the mass evacuation from the underground bunkers. Parvo moved away from the window and fastened the belt on his trench coat.
Let's go.
The copter's door slid to the side, a ramp folded out, and Parvo, his bodyguard, and three guardsmen wearing sidearms cycled out. Everywhere snow glared bright as burning magnesium in the morning sunlight. The Brinkman bodyguard squealed and pressed a bony-knuckled paw over its eyes. Its sensitive vision made the creature invaluable in the dark confines of a nightclub, or the blind violence of a street brawl. But on a day like today, it caused only needles of pain. Parvo took a pair of mirror shades from inside his trench coat and put them onto the creature's face, securing them behind its cauliflower ears. With a grunt, the Brinkman gave a drawn-lipped smile that confirmed its partial primate parentage.
Into the forest.
Parvo threw a dramatic arm gesture toward the closely packed trees and pedaled off at the head of a short column. Soon, they reached the river.
Dismount!
Parvo dropped his bike and walked to the riverbed. Water bubbled over rounded stones. Where the sun penetrated, the rocks of the riverbed shone white and gold. The spacer was not in sight. The day felt unlike the last time he was here, somehow more sinister. Perhaps it was simply because of the things he had learned. He was glad he'd refused Einar's request to come along. He was not the most empathetic of individuals, but the thought of Einar getting hurt brought on a discomfort in his chest that he could not name. The sensation was both welcome and not welcome. And if that made no sense, then it adequately described the confusion he felt.
Spread out away from the main pathway, he told his men. Find another path, little used, well hidden, and try not to spike yourself on a thornberry or throw yourself into the river. Now move.
Parvo waited on the main path with his bodyguard beside him. Up in the trees, copycat cockatoos swapped trivy jingles. Neutralize Napoleon, gnawing nuts with Waterloo shampoo. And oil of grass, cream of fern, smooth cyclist ass and saddle burn. And get the sleep of the dead on a bugmaster bed, among others. It was all very familiar. Parvo had cycled this route so many times. Yet on all his trips into the forest, he'd never before met anyone as strange as the spacer. An odd coincidence that he should meet her just now with the murders happening. He was convinced that taking her into custody was the right move. At a yell from one of the guards, he ran across a small meadow dotted with tussocks of heather thistle.
A clue, my lord.
Indeed, it was a glitterfish scale stuck to a low branch, and it revealed a barely distinguishable gap and a narrow, well-trodden pathway through the trees and thick, spiky bushes.
Leave the bikes. Walking will be tough enough.
Parvo moved the Brinkman to the front, as its thick skin was more resistant to thorns and biters. He took six lightweight, razor-sharp machetes from inside his trench coat and put one blade in each of its paws, then placed a sugar cube onto its extended tongue. The creature set off along the new path, arms whirling and vegetation flying. If the bodyguard could keep up this pace, and manage not to hack off a limb in its frantic enthusiasm, they should get to their target quickly. With the astringent odor of sappy wounds assailing his senses, Parvo ushered his men after the Brinkman,
and took up the rear.
Next time on The Monster on Mandrake Street,
the woman smiled.
The palace is the one place on this world that the monster couldn't get to. Your security's too good.
Ah, yes, the monster. The girl on Mandrake Street told me about your monster.
You sound skeptical.
Oh, I don't doubt that monsters do exist. I have a whole world of them. But I'm less certain of your monster. How could you share a ship and not meet...
His words trailed off, and he pointed at her with the tooth.
What do you mean this is the one place the monster couldn't get to?